Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 11 of Could It Be Podcast. This one has been my favourite one to record so far, as I am joined by a very special guest. He's the man behind the music on the intro and outro on this podcast, and he's my partner, Jacob. So we thought this one might be a good podcast for anyone who is the partner of somebody having breast explant surgery. We just talk about his perspective on it and how he felt about the whole situation when I brought it up with him, and how he provided support to me before, during, and after the hospital, and like coming home from hospital and all that kind of thing. If you are having explant surgery, feel free to share this one with your partner. And yeah, I hope you enjoy today's episode. Here it is. Welcome to today's very special episode, where I have a special guest on the podcast with me. I'd like to introduce you to my amazing partner, Jacob.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm a long time listener, first time caller, and all that.
Welcome, welcome. All right, so what we've done, we've talked about a few of the questions. Some of the questions I do have here today are ones that I am going to spring on Jacob, especially the first and the third question.
Oh, no. So
we are going to get straight into it. So Jacob, tell me, what were your first thoughts when I told you that I was thinking of removing my implants?
Well, I think I was very open to it. I don't know if it's too personal, but I didn't realize when we first met that you had implants in the first place. So it's not like I was attached to the idea of them or anything. You know, some people are, or I'm led to believe that they are. Yeah, like I was, because you'd explained it, the reasons why you were thinking it, and we had actually mentioned it. It wasn't just out of nowhere. We had talked about it before, and you talked about hearing about this breast implant illness thing. I was obviously very, very open to it, and I sort of think it's not really my business to have a strong opinion about it in terms of like, how does that make me feel or something. It's not really my place to be saying or thinking those kind of things, but yeah, definitely open to trying to find any possible solutions to the challenges that you were having.
What were your observations symptom-wise before I had the surgery?
Yeah, well, so a lot of the issues that we were noticing were things to do with physical soreness and achiness and feeling lethargic and that kind of stuff. And that wasn't immediately apparent to me because you're a very active person, and I wasn't actually quite, when we began being together. Yeah, like you really introduced me to a lot more, living a much more active lifestyle and doing a lot of exercise and working on fitness and those kind of things. And I had played sport before. I had done a lot of exercise before, but I hadn't played for quite a while, and so I hadn't really done much in the way of fitness and exercise apart from just enough to be able to survive as an organism. And so, so you were already doing more exercise than I was used to. So it didn't seem to me like that you had too many challenges. It seemed like something that came easy to you. But as we spent more time together, I could see the sort of inconsistency in what you were able to do. So one example that comes to mind is like, we're going on like 1.5 hour, 2 hour hikes, and one time it's an easy thing. We might have even done some exercise earlier in that day, and we're now going on a hike and everything's going fine. And then we go to do the exact same hike, a few weeks later, and we're having to do like pauses halfway through a climb, pauses up a hill. So I could see the inconsistency in it, and it was obvious that it wasn't we have to do a pause because we haven't done it for a while and my fitness has gone down or something. It was like, no, we're still at the same level, but yeah, a hill that was done easily was now difficult. And as we started living together, I could see in the mornings it was a bit of a challenge to get going in terms of soreness and those sort of things, and they just seemed not justifiable based on the exercise. You get sore after you do a little bit like exercise for the first time, but it doesn't come back once you're used to it. So that was becoming obvious. And then also, the hair loss was a thing, and it was quite a lot, and it was concerning to see, and it was concerning to see how increasingly worried it was making you, because every time you'd have a shower and then comb your hair and that sort of stuff, you'd be left with all of this hair in the sink and hair in the shower, and you can't have that go on forever, otherwise you're going to run out. So those things were becoming pretty apparent, and maybe they were escalating, or maybe we were just being more aware of them. But yeah, those things were definitely noticeable in the lead up for sure.
Yeah. This is the other surprise question. Uh-oh. And this is the last one, I promise. Oh, no. Were you ever worried that you wouldn't like the way that I looked after I had my implants removed?
No, not at all. Like, I don't know, I don't want to make myself sound like some virtuous person or whatever, but like,
he is.
yeah, like I don't for me, like a big part of what makes you attractive and attractiveness in general is based on the time that you spend with someone and the sort of world that you build together, you know, and that's a big part of what makes you find someone attractive and then fall in love with them, you know, and that it's something that you've built. It's not the way that it's shown in films where it just like hits you like lightning and it's like, oh, I love this person. And maybe it is for some people, I don't know, but that's to me, yeah. So it's not going to be something that gets impacted by something like that, and especially, you know, especially something that's been done for well-being and health reasons, you know, it's not going to be a factor that plays into that. You know, we're doing this episode to be like an advice thing, and I think there's definitely relationships out there where physical attractiveness is a huge central part of the relationship, and I don't want to downplay that. Like, I find you very attractive, but, you know, that it's a part of certainly the early days of, you know, when you're meeting someone, that's for sure. But I think it remains quite important for some people. And, you know, so I've known people that, you know, when they're living together, they're still like fully wearing makeup and dressing really sharp when they're at home together, you know, that's what I've seen or perceived from people. And it's like, who are you dressing up for? Like for each other, like it, you know, and that's fair enough. And so my advice is like, if that's something that's a big part of the relationship, that's something that you might need to work through before heading down this path, because you want to make sure that what you've got together is built on something a bit more solid than just that physical attractiveness. That if it's going to become something that you can't see past, that's something that you probably want to work on and address and really talk through first before heading down that path, because you don't want to be being confronted with that post-surgery when you've got all these other things to be concerned about, and you wanting to be sensitive and supporting about. You don't want to be, yeah, running into that hurdle at that point. So that would be my advice. But for me, yeah, it wasn't a problem, as I said.
And I guess to add to that as well, you know, if your partner has some symptoms that are holding them back from being able to do a lot of things, like I don't think I really let my symptoms stop me from doing a lot. Like you said, we do a lot of exercise, we hike, we ride bikes and that kind of thing. But I would end up feeling quite sore. And some of those hikes, I would actually say, I am not enjoying this because my muscles felt like they were going to explode. I was in so much pain.
Yeah, I could see the frustration. Like, yeah. And I get that. Like, I used to play hockey, and I was relatively good at it. I was a little successful and played in some good teams and stuff like that. But I had some knee and wrist problems towards the end of when I was playing. And yeah, the frustration of just not being able to do something that you could do before.
Yeah.
And in my case, I knew exactly why, but in your case, not knowing why, that would be really frustrating, because I felt that and I knew what the problem was. Mm. I couldn't do much about it, but I knew what it was. But yeah, so that's the... seeing that frustration was sad to see, but it sort of reinforced why this is probably a good decision,
yeah,
for you, because yeah, it's something that's really had become a hurdle in your life and the lifestyle that you wanted.
Definitely. All right, that was the last of the surprise questions, I promise.
All right, back to my notes.
So if you were to give some advice to the partners of women having explant surgery, first of all, how would you recommend supporting your partner in the lead up to the surgery?
Well, I was lucky. I think we complement each other well in our relationship, but mostly because you have strengths in all of my deficits.
And
I'm not sure. I can't confirm about the other way around. But yeah, I was lucky in that you're a very forward thinking and forward planning person, and so I'm not just talking about the next day, but like weeks and months in advance. So things that needed to be prepared, such as like surgery clothes that you wanted to buy, like bras that have the zip at the front, so you don't need to be reaching around, and when you're going to have a sore upper body, and things like pillows for the bed that allow you to lay in a position that's comfortable post surgery, right down to planning the car parks at the hospital and planning life events in the lead up and around the. So we had a lot of conversations about that, but you were driving a lot of that. So my recommendation would be for partners, if the person that's going through the surgery is not necessarily someone whose strength is in that area, is that you could try and step up and be that person and planning and just thinking about all of those little hurdles that you don't want to be dealing with after or around the surgery. So that would be a big part. Like I said, I was lucky in that regard. And so so you've asked me, yeah, like preparing and the lead up. I think in terms of like emotional support, yeah, like with this particular, I think one of the challenges with this particular illness is that it's not fully recognized by the medical community, profession, whatever the word is. Mm-hmm. From what I can tell and from what we've been reading, it's not fully recognized and supported. It's kind of tacitly supported. So obviously there were surgeons that were willing to do it and they weren't asking too many questions, and they weren't going like, you know, this wasn't seen as some kind of mental health thing, like you're insisting on this surgery but there's no medical reason for it.
Mm.
Now they haven't recognized there's a medical reason for it necessarily, but they're still doing the surgery, so it's sort of tacitly admitted. But that's something that I think you can help with to work through, like both not being pushy about it. Like I wouldn't want to have accidentally pushed you into a surgery that you were just half thinking about, you know, but at the same time being open to the things that you were experiencing and the things that you were researching, and yeah, being open to the fact that like on some issues, yeah, what you were experiencing and what others in the that you've seen in those online communities and stuff related to this illness, like what those people were experiencing was legitimate.
Mm.
Despite the fact that it wasn't necessarily something that you were going to be seeing from a lot of medical professionals. So being supportive and open in that way would be a really helpful thing to be, and yeah, like to be open to the waves of different feelings that you're going to be having about it. You know, so you made a strong decision, I'm going to have this surgery, this is what I'm going to do. But, you know, there were moments of doubt that came through, and there were moments of what, you know, being concerned about what I was going to feel about it, and concerned about how I would feel about what you would look like and those sort of things. And so you can be, I think the most important thing is to be open about it and to talk about it and to talk through if you've got any doubts, you know, or like even if I was the kind of person that would be like, I'm not sure, like I'm concerned about being attracted to you or something, it would be better to talk about that.
Definitely.
It would be like, it's not ideal, but it would be better to talk about it than to bottle it up and leave it as something lingering in the background. So that, yeah, those would probably be my main pieces of advice.
Yeah. Definitely. And going back to where you said about, you know, the fact that I was forward thinking, and not everyone necessarily is. Like when you are chronically ill, you're not necessarily going to think ahead. So this is a good opportunity for me to plug my previous episodes. There is actually an episode on this podcast about preparing for surgery, and also on the Could It BII podcast Instagram, I do share different things that I did and bought in the lead up to the surgery. So, you know, as a person having an explant surgery or as a partner, that could be something that you look at. And there's definitely, like Jacob said, the online communities, there are Facebook groups, and some of them do have files that they share on different things that they recommend that you buy in the lead up to an operation. So that could be something that you look at together too. Something else that I would just add in, and it's something that I did, but again, that's just because I have to plan ahead all the time. Like, you know, thinking about like calling the hospital to check around their restrictions thanks to COVID with visitors. So we could only have one visitor a day, and that was you. I was very fortunate that you were able to, you know, take me into hospital and come and visit me straight after work and that kind of thing. And another thing, obviously talking to, like for the partner to talk to their workplace about taking any necessary time off. You know, we don't have children, so it was just really you taking me into hospital and then you coming to visit me after work, but, you know, obviously organizing people to look after kids and animals and that kind of thing. But yeah, talking to the workplace about that, we only needed for you that day off. And my surgery wasn't quite as extreme. It wasn't a lift as well. It was just having my explant surgery, like the implants taken out. So I recovered quite well, but other people would probably need a bit more physical support and for their partner to take a bit more time off of work.
Yeah, and I don't want to say you were lucky, but you've got some personal experience with surgery. Like you're a veteran at this point. So yeah. I think that prior experience about how to deal with the lead up and the process and the feelings, like you're well experienced and a veteran in that regard. So that certainly helped you in this situation. It's probably why you're even doing the podcast. Like you were able to not only have the surgery, but then have the forethought to build a podcast around it and share your experiences. Because you're like, oh, I've been through this enough times. I can think of other people.
You know,
things like the parking at the hospital. Like I'm not so you're. I can see from the podcast we've got listeners from all over the world at this point. So in Australia and in Adelaide, we've got some very overzealous parking inspectors. Yes. I would say the parking area is parking is quite a challenge. You want to make sure you're thinking about that. Hospital car parks can have extremely high fees, so we were trying to look for somewhere on the street. It was an awesome hospital that you went to, but it is quite near the major sporting ground that we have in our city. So the parking around that area has got a lot of restrictions because they don't want people parking long term during sporting events. So we had to really think and plan those things. And that's not something you would want to plan on the day.
On the day, no, when you're nervous enough already. And one thing that we did talk about was if we were running out of time, what Jacob did was he actually dropped me out at the front of the hospital first, went to find a park and called me when he got the park to let me know how far away he would be. So that if it was the actual time where I needed to go into the hospital, I'd be able to go in, check in, let him know where I am and he can come and find me just to take away from those nerves. I found that super helpful.
Lucky enough to, it wasn't a close park, but there was only a golf course in the way. So I was able to run across the golf course and dodge the golf balls to get there pretty quickly. So it all worked out.
Yeah. And we had to think ahead as well, because you had planned to stay in the hospital with me until visiting hours finished at 8 p.m. and it was dark. Like it's winter in Adelaide at the moment. So also your safety was something that I was thinking about. You're like, no, I'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, like a little bit of trivia, but if you're, we might have some crossover fans with true crime podcasts, and our city is known for some very famous and grisly murders. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't victim of one of those. But
no, I needed you to bring me home from hospital.
Yeah, so I made it.
Okay, next question. What would you suggest partners do on the day of the surgery in hospital and coming home from hospital? I guess we've covered a little bit of that around the day of the surgery.
But... yeah. So one thing that I sort of, again, it feels weird to make this about anything about me when it's like you're having the surgery. But I think one of the things that you probably want to do as a partner in the hospital is to just make sure that you've got things on hand to distract yourself. So I brought in a couple of books and I had music to listen to. You know, it's all pretty classic, like books, music, podcasts. But I think that the reason it was important is that, and probably something I wasn't quite expecting, was that when you got handed over to the doctors, that's the moment where you really, like, you lose control of the situation, you know. And it's, you know, when the phrasing I would use is like, when you've got something precious and you want to make sure that everyone that's going to be caring for or holding or whatever, the thing that you have that's precious, you want to make sure that you trust them and you've vetted them and you know what they're all about. And you know, and that's not something you can really do with doctors, you know. And now we've got some, you know, you've got regulatory bodies and organizations to make sure that everything's fine. And I did have, obviously I had faith in that whole process, but it still doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. and you know, this is a pretty common feeling. So I'm thinking about like TV shows where someone's been in a car accident and the character's been rushed into the hospital on the hospital bed, and it's always their partner or their police partner, if it's a police show, or their parent or whatever, running alongside the hospital bed, like, it's going to be okay. And they're like, ma'am, you have to get away. Like, like this is a thing that's shown a lot. Like people want to get in there and help, even though they don't have any of the expertise to help. And, you know, and it's something we have to deal with. Like if you ever take a flight, you have to trust that the person flying the plane knows what they're doing and that the people fixing the plane maintained it properly, even though you don't get to meet all those people and check that they're trustworthy people. That's just part of life, you know, but that's a feeling that you're going to have. But if you're going to sit in a hospital room for multiple hours, you don't want to be feeling that for a long period of time. So yeah, so distractions are, you know, a good thing to have. So I sort of just got stuck deep into a book for most of the time. If you're a caffeine addict like me, make sure that caffeine is on hand. So yeah, they're actually really nice and allowed me to use the tea room. That sort of probably was more for patients and like staff, but they allowed me to go in there and make myself a little cup of coffee. So that was really nice of them, and that helped me with my issues. But I probably could have brought in like a flask of something, if coffee, I mean, not a flask of anything else. But yeah, that's just stuff like that to make sure that you're able to basically switch off your brain as necessary, so that you're not like a panic thinker. And I guess for people that are overthinkers and panic sort of type people, and if you know that about yourself, you want to give yourself the tools on hand to sort of keep those worries at bay until, you know, the doctors do their thing.
Mm. I guess, like, on the day, thinking back, I had no idea that you were thinking like that, that you were worried about handing me over to the doctor. And but you were so calm, and, you know, you were great where we were talking normally, and then you'd also make the occasional little joke, but nothing ever felt forced. Like, you were really genuine in just keeping my mind off of what I was doing without also, like, shunning the idea that that's what we were there for. So yeah, you're really brilliant. I guess, you know, any advice to a partner would be
and through my like work and things, I've probably dealt with people that are in stressful or crisis or on the verge of tears and this sort of thing. And the one thing that you don't want to do is make your worries their problem. Mm. Like, in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to be able to find like a, I think of it like a gear, like a car or bike gear. Like, you have to find a gear that I'll deal with my feelings after. Like, right now it's about keeping a really serene and probably lighthearted, for me anyway, like keeping a lighthearted feel about what we're doing. Yeah, the last thing that you need is to have my feelings, like, you know, you don't want you to be thinking about someone else's feelings like during that period of time. You just want to be like focused on what we're doing and as not stressed as possible.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing that I sort of did, like, this is my way of preparing to try and make it less stressful for you, because I'm always thinking about what I'm eating next. Like, I made sure that there were plenty of snacks packed for you as well.
Oh, that was good. Yeah.
And I guess the car parking thing as well, like, it's always stressful trying to find a park, and that was my way of trying to make the day as smooth as possible for you. I guess, like, coming home from hospital, one thing that I had to talk the nurses through was their checkout time is kind of like a hotel. Like, they're like, oh, normally you need to leave by 10 o'clock. And I had told one nurse, but obviously some of this information doesn't always get passed from one to the next. But I was like, I was going to organize for my partner to pick me up straight after work. So I guess talking that through. And then the drive home, you were brilliant. I think, like, you're a really careful driver anyway, but any time I have had surgery, it's always been go really slow over any of the spoon drains, over speed bumps, and slow around corners, because after you have like something quite firm in your chest and suddenly you've got these natural soft boobs, you know, every bump you feel tenfold. Like, so I guess for any partner bringing your partner home from hospital, please drive carefully. Mm-hmm. And even bring a pillow for them just to sit under their chest. I do mention this in the previous episodes, but
yeah. Yeah, and you know, I just put a little time, just a little bit of thought into the path that we would take home, and yeah, just avoiding, there's a couple of possible speed bumps that we could have gone past. We still had to go, we live far enough from the hospital that we would be going on the freeway or the expressway. So, you know, we're going 110 kilometers an hour at points, or I'm not sure what that is in miles if you're listening in other countries, but you know, it's pretty quick. So you want to make sure that you're just driving probably a little bit conservatively,
mindful of other drivers.
Yeah, and that's not something that comes naturally to some people, but yeah. You know, my car's old enough that I can't really drive aggressively anyway, so we're all fine.
We both drive like nanas and grandpas, so we're safe. So the next question, what physical support would you suggest a partner provides once you are home from hospital?
Well, I think firstly, you have to, if you've got a partner like mine who insists on doing everything, you have to intervene and be a little bit pushy in terms of intervening. So, yeah, it's probably like a, you know, when you've got some sort of surgery, that's just one part of the body. There's other parts of the body that feel fine. So you sort of can trick yourself into thinking that you're better than you are. So you want to make sure you're always following doctor's advice. And even if there's two more weeks left of rest before you can do something, but you feel fine, still listen to the advice, because the body's still doing things and you can always re-tear or re-injure things. So yeah, like pretty a lot of the classic things, like lift any heavy lifting, especially anything that's on a high shelf or a higher cupboard, we have to make sure that I'm proactive in getting those things. And because, you know, it only takes one time to re-injure something, and it might just be that you're not thinking and you just go to reach up to grab something and then boom, stitches are needed or whatever, you know. So that's something, just be a bit proactive and aware of that. And yeah, and things like taking the rubbish out, or the trash, depending on which country you're in, but taking we call it rubbish, taking the rubbish out to the bins and then out onto the road, and that sort of thing you want to be a bit proactive with. And also, if you've got any large animals, so we're here living with a large golden retriever dog that is like a polar bear, and if you get her excited, she's just going to storm around the house and knock things over and could bump into you, or she's very well trained, but she does sometimes
she forgets her training when she's excited.
Yeah, so she'll jump on the couch and could knock you and that sort of thing. So, you know, making sure not to get her too excited in the wrong place and that sort of stuff. It's not a difficult thing, but yeah, just a little bit of forethought certainly helps, I think.
Yeah. And one thing that I had planned to do, and I did do when I came home from hospital, I know that I can sometimes wake up in the middle of the night after I've had surgery, not normally, like I normally sleep through the night. So I had set myself up in the spare room with a TV, just because Jacob was continuing to work once I came home from hospital, and I didn't want to wake him up through the night. He was insistent on like, no, that's fine. Like, don't worry about me. But, you know, we're both quite considerate of each other. So I slept in the spare room it was a few weeks, wasn't it? And yeah, I had it set up so that everything was close by as well, so that it wasn't reaching. But, you know, you'd always check in to see if there was anything that you could do. And like on the topic of making sure that you are the person that's reaching up to get anything off of high shelves, where you were going to work and I thought that I might need something from those shelves, I would say like, oh, do you mind grabbing that for me? So I guess be mindful of that, like, you know.
Yeah, and like that again, I'm helped because you're thinking ahead. But if someone's not thinking ahead, maybe, yeah, if you put a bit of thought into, put, you know, you could put certain things, take certain things down from a higher shelf that are going to be in regular use, that would be a smart thing, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think as well, like you kind of covered this, but there were moments where I felt like I was okay to do things and I wasn't. And you were really great where you were like, nope, let me do it. Don't you dare, kind of thing. But yeah, I'd be like, oh no, I can take this out, I can lift this up. And you're like, no. So I guess this is probably for a partner and for the person having surgery, where you think that you might be ready to do something, obviously listen to doctor's orders, but give yourself a bit more time than what you think that you like, yeah. I guess give it a couple more weeks before you do the thing that you feel like you're ready to do it. And another thing that I forgot to cover as well, we'd even talked about the fact that I might not be able to wash my own hair coming out of hospital. And we talked about the fact that Jacob might need to do that for me, and you were ready to do it. But I was really lucky. Like, I washed my own hair 2 days after surgery and managed all my self-care on my own. But yeah, I guess that's something that some partners might need to help.
Yeah, and that's, you know, yeah, very fortunately we didn't have to, you know, because obviously there's showering and washing, but like in some people's situations there's going to the toilet and that sort of thing. And that's something I've seen my parents have to go through at various points. And that's something that it's especially someone that you care for, but also someone that, you know, like, you know, we're relatively young, we don't see each other as like someone that you need to care for, you know, and that really, that would add an element to your relationship that if you're younger, it might not be something that you've had to experience. So that would be a certain something to work through and work through compassionately, because it's, you know, a bit embarrassing. And
Yeah, it's someone's pride.
It's a very prideful thing. And if you're an independent person, it's not something that you're prepared for. So, yeah, like, okay, fortunately, we've not had to do that. So I'm just talking about that, about nothing that I've experienced. But that would be something to consider as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it just adds an element to your relationship that you wouldn't have had to deal with before.
Yeah, for sure. I have one more question for you.
Oh, no.
So what changes have you noticed around my breast implant illness symptoms since I've had the surgery?
Yeah, I mean, there's been heaps, and I'm sure they've all been like well documented on the show. but yeah, I was really surprised. Like some of the things, the change to your eyes, like the color of your eyes becoming more vibrant and the whites of your eyes being much more brilliant was like the same day,
yeah.
Like same day, next day sort of thing, which was crazy. And almost an instant change to physical soreness and joint soreness. And that it was amazing to see. And I sort of mentioned this before, but like I am a quite a skeptical person generally, like not, I don't mean like in a cynical way, but like a, you know, generally I trust the medical or scientific consensus on things. So it's been interesting because given that this illness is not fully recognized, or it's tacitly recognized, as I said before, seeing such undeniable evidence in front of my eyes that the change was instant was real, a real eye-opening thing and a real surprising and shocking thing to see. And that's, yeah, it's been an interesting experience sort of, and having to work that into my worldview of, you know, normally going a bit, you know, because on in the world of online health is an interesting place, you know, and there's going to be some particular illnesses that have more evidence for them than others, and some illnesses and conditions and things that the evidence for different things is in different places is all I'll say. But to see that the evidence so clearly in front of me sort of really has opened my perspective to probably more things in general. Yeah, it's been really interesting, and those changes were sudden. So you've had new hair growth, like just
every day. I'm like, Jacob, look at this new hair.
Yeah, it's been hard to miss because I get shown regular updates. But yeah, like new hair growth, like almost straight away. Yeah, and I think especially the physical soreness was the thing that really got me, because you know sometimes you've had a hard time, you know, like getting out of a chair.
I still grunt now.
Yeah, it's been something that you dread having to get up. And you know, that has little effects on your everyday. Like, you know, like if you've had a day of work, and then you have dinner together, and you know maybe 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, there is time that you could do other activities. Well, it doesn't have to be exercise. It could be anything. It could be going for a walk. You could still catch a movie. You could still go out and grab an ice cream. There's things that you could do. But if you're dealing with soreness all the time, it's much easier to make the decision to sit in front of the TV, which is absolutely valid. You know, I don't want to say, you know, like, again, I don't want to undermine anyone's life choices, but like when you're someone that would like to be doing things, you can be sort of, your body's influencing you to be more of a home body than you really are, you know? And so to have that burden of like just joint soreness and, you know, having to, just if you're going to go for a walk, you've got to do all these stretches and things, you know, to have that removed has been huge to see. And it's going to, you know, you're already able to sort of take the initiative and do more activities, even though your recovery is still not fully finished yet. So that's been awesome to see. But yeah, the changes that were there were sudden and strong and really, really clear.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had that day where I got up. Like I can't sleep in. I physically cannot sleep in. Most of it's because my dog wakes me up at 6:30 without fail on the weekends. Thanks, Harper. But I try to get back to sleep and I can't, and you can't sleep in. So I tend to sort of try and do things, but like I haven't been able to do a lot because of my restrictions post-surgery. So there was one morning, a Saturday morning, where I got up. I did a big walk. I think I mentioned it in one of the previous episodes. Called into the shops, grabbed some stuff to make us some breakfast. And then once we'd eaten, I was like, all right, when are we going for a bike ride? And I wouldn't have necessarily been able to do that so quickly before the operation. we didn't go for a huge bike ride, but it was still like 16 kilometers or something like that. And then as soon as we got home, I was like, can we mow the lawns? Like, you know, I had so much more energy.
Yeah. It's really, it's been huge to see. And, you know, one advantage is that you maintain still an active lifestyle and an enthusiasm when you had those problems. And now those problems are gone. You're going to be a monster. So I'm in trouble, but so you guys can send me advice if you'd like. but that's great. You know, you've been living your life with weights on, and now the weights get taken off, and you know you can let it rip, as we say.
Another thing I think you mentioned before when we were talking before we started recording this episode was that you've witnessed those detox waves that I've had.
Yeah. So it's not all positives.
No, like, it's not all rosy. So
it's like a sort of, it seems to be the same way that a migraine works. Like it comes in a sudden sort of wave and you can say, oh, it's coming. This is it. And so that's something to think about as well. I guess it's a little bit like, you know, a lot of people when they're on medicines, they'll be weaned off of the medicines because they have addictive properties to them. And whatever was going on with the breast implant illness and the toxins and this, however it works, it seems to be that once that's suddenly removed from your body sort of is a little bit confused. You know, it's been dealing with having XYZ in its system and it's been doing that for years. It's been slowly increasing over time and now it's gone. And so there's these sort of like moments of like what feels like probably a withdrawal feeling. And so, you know, that's just something to think about, that you don't want to be caught in a situation where you're having one of those, because, you know, it's not really something that painkillers can fix. Like if you know, we take like paracetamol or whatever, if we've got a headache, I'm not sure if that would necessarily work the same way.
The strong hospital ones have helped so far. They've run out.
Yeah, so yeah, medical grade, you know, painkillers. But you don't want to be caught needing to drive a long way with no one else that can drive the car when that's going to happen. So that's just another piece of forward thinking that might be helpful.
Yeah, and also I guess like for a partner to know that they happen. So when I do have those detox waves, some of those symptoms come back. There have been days where I wash my hair and a lot more of my hair has come out again. And you were really supportive emotionally when I was like, oh no, like, this has happened. And even some of the longer walks I've gone on, I've started them and I've had calf cramps like I'd had before the surgery. And there's been like, you know, 95% of the days where I haven't had them since the operation, but they come back. They last a day or two maybe when I have that kind of thing happen. But yeah, like it can be a little disheartening as the person having explant surgery completed, because you're making this decision to improve your health, but there is a period of time, and I'll you know, obviously keep listeners updated as to how long this lasts, but it might be well over a year before I stop having them. But yeah, as a partner, just understand that you know, your partner is going to go through these up and downs post-surgery, and it's completely normal from what I'm reading, from what people are experiencing, and yeah, just support them through it.
Yeah, and I guess as an emerging, like, awareness is occurring about the illness, that's going to be something that people hopefully feel more assured about. You know, yeah, as we're a little bit, you're an explorer at the moment, so
yeah, you're a pioneer.
Yeah, that's right. So you know, that's why the things like the podcast and the online communities can be really helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Cool, that's all I have for you.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I've been hearing them being recorded in the other room, and it's been great to be a part of it. Maybe jump on it some other time whenever you need another perspective or something.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, thank you. You've been so supportive through all of this, and like I think I've said this to my friends before, just in relationship sense, we're going to get gooey here, but like, everybody needs a Jacob. Like, if your partner's not supporting you the way that Jacob supported me through this, dump them. Sorry.
Wow. Okay. So it was going to be such a positive episode, and now everyone's going to know.
No, we can cut that out. But yes, you've been brilliant. You've been so supportive. So thank you.
Oh, no problem.
And just another thing that I would like to add, which we didn't think about at the time of recording this episode, so Jacob's not here for this part, but we were walking the dogs and I was like, oh, I forgot a really important part of what I would like partners to know about when your partner's having explant surgery. So I didn't necessarily love the way I looked coming straight out of hospital, and I was very self-conscious to the point where I didn't even want to see myself in the mirror if I wasn't covered. So I also did speak to Jacob about this and said, look, it'll be a few weeks before I'm ready for you to see how I look. I'm going to close the shower door when I'm in the bathroom, that kind of thing. And he was very, very understanding of it. So I guess just my advice to the partners of anyone having explant surgery, just have some patience and understanding of we're going through a big thing and a big change in our bodies. And we might not be quite ready for you to see us just yet, but eventually we will. The tissue, if we still have any breast tissue left over, it does fluff up over time. So we will, you know, gain our confidence again in this new body that we have. So yeah, just give us some time. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Feel free to get in touch with me on the Instagram, which is the Could It Be II podcast Instagram. And just a reminder, if you're listening and you have a story to share and you'd like to jump on the podcast, feel free to reach out on that Instagram account as well, and we'll look at getting you in on the podcast. Take care, and we will speak with you soon. Bye. This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldit_be_ii_podcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you for listening.